I have no Aerosmith quotes this week. I am very tired. I just got back from the gym. I am horribly unprepared. Welcome to Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. My name is Corey Morissette. Unfortunately, joining me as always, the sexiest man in podcasting, Scott K. Haskin. How you doing, Scott?
Well, Corey, I feel like we've just both been drugged through the mud the last day or so. But here we're talking about Aerosmith. So how bad can life be?
Exactly. Life's pretty good now. I've had this last couple of days has been a hell of a week, I tell you. It's been absolutely exhausting, but we're here talking about one of, if not the greatest band from America, the Bad Boys from Boston, Aerosmith. Currently, their world tour is on pause. Steven had, I guess he just ripped the hell out of his vocal cords, unfortunately, but he will sing again. He's taking a month's rest, and hopefully that'll do her, and the boys can get back on the road. I'm still hoping that they might add another leg in North America so we can check him out, Scott.
I would absolutely love that. We could have him play over at the Sphere. That'd be a great venue for them. Love to have them come back, especially because they cut their residency short and there was a lot of people that didn't get to see them, like myself. So it'd be great to have them here too.
I'll tell you what, if they announce Las Vegas date, I'm gonna try and maybe fly down there and we can meet up and check them out.
Well, I think we'd have to.
Yeah, there you go. That's the promise. If in 2024 they're hitting Las Vegas, I'll get my passport renewed and I'll make the trek down to Vegas. And I want to go see this Sphere. Are you going to go check out U2 when they're there in a few weeks' time?
No, because I don't have another house to finance to pay for the ticket. That's right. Pretty insane. Their prices are, they're pricey. No, the Sphere is really cool, though. I have to say, for all the hype, it is really pretty amazing to see what they can do with that display. When they put the eyeball on, that's my favorite.
I've seen that one. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
I would love to go see a show there. I've heard that acoustically is supposed to be really amazing. I have a friend who's one of the house audio engineers there. So it should be a cool venue. But Corey, let me ask you, here in the States right now, they're saying 6 to 9 months for passport renewals. How are things in Canada?
You know what? I don't think they're that bad right now. Coming out of COVID, they were about that long. I think probably 2-3 months is where we're at right here, because as soon as all the restrictions were lifted, a bunch of people went out and got their passports because they want to head back down to warmer climates, right? Mm-hmm. It was around wintertime here, but so we just kind of hung back, said we don't need to go to the States for a little while. We'll just kind of wait, but if Aerosmith announces something, I'll get on the trolley and I'll get my passport renewed. I'll either clear it with the wife or find a new wife and then head on down to Vegas.
Nice. I'm in for that.
I tell you, you too, as we record this, they were in Las Vegas the other night recording a new video for a song called Atomic City that they wrote about Las Vegas. On your walks, did you happen to see Bono and the boys recording a video?
You know, I have not been, I think I've gone on one walk in the last month or so, just because between the rain and being really busy and all the F1 construction, and for me, F1 does not stand for formula in this case, I have not been down to the strip a whole lot. So I'm going to be going back, but I wonder if that's because of the atomic testing site that we have, the atomic bar, where they used to go and drink and watch the testing. And I've been there. It's a pretty cool place. So I wonder if it's related to that.
I would imagine so. I didn't hear too much of the song because people were just recording little snippets on their phones. Mm-hmm. But they were recording on Fremont Street, I guess, last night. They wrote a song called Atomic City. They love Vegas. They shot, of course, the video for I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For down there. And I always have an affinity for Vegas. So, and of course, the big residency coming up. So it was kind of apropos.
Well, you know, Fremont Street is where the Atomic Bar is. It's not on the popular area. It's down a ways off of, you know, like away from Las Vegas Boulevard. But it is on Fremont.
You know, I've been to Vegas twice, spent like 5 days each time, never went to Fremont Street. Because each time we heard there was a shooting, And yeah. I thought, I don't want to get shot, so we'll just stick to the main drag.
It is a more dangerous area, but it's typically so densely populated with people, you know, just milling around that it's not really that bad. Just stay aware of your surroundings, which I would recommend anywhere you go here mm-hmm. or really anywhere. It's pretty cool. It's something to see once, especially at nighttime when you can really appreciate the light show. But it's something that, you know, you can go down there and spend an hour and say, okay, I've seen Fremont Street. I'm good. But if you want cheap eats and cheap drinks, it's a great place to hang out for a night.
Well, if we're going to see an Aerosmith show, we're going to need cheap everything because Aerosmith tickets are a little pricey. But
yes, they are.
I digress. Maybe let's talk about what we're here to do. Yeah. And what we're here to do is to break down the Aerosmith catalog. And what we're doing is we're compiling the ultimate Aerosmith mixtape. We're going through every single song the band ever recorded. We even did some live tracks early on in the show's history, back when we had two mixtapes. Right now, we just have one mixtape, nine tracks aside. We have the all-time Aerosmith top nine, and we have deep cuts. So last week, we did a song called Out of Your Head, and it was out of our lives pretty darn quick. It wasn't too bad, but certainly not good enough to make either of the mixtapes, which means we're here. We put six songs on a die. We're going to roll the die, and we're going to come up with something. Let's just quickly recap what's on our die for tonight's show. We have Think About It from Night in the Ruts, Never Loved a Girl from Honkin' on Bobo, We All Fall Down from Music from Another Dimension, Back in the Saddle added last week from Scott Haskin from Rocks, Love in an Elevator from Pump, and Something from Music from Another Dimension. Scott Haskin, what are you in the mood for tonight?
You know, Corey, I think with the week or the 3 weeks that we've had in the last 2 days, I think we deserve something that's going to get us all pumped up again. I'm going to go with Back in the Saddle.
Back in the Saddle. I have no problems with that one, but I'm going to pick the other hit single that we have on the dice, Love in an Elevator. As long as we get one of those two, I'm going to be pretty gosh darn happy. But what do you say? Let's throw it over to Steven Tyler and see what we come up with. And we are going to get Never Loved a Girl from Honkin' on Bobo. This is a Scott Haskin add to the die. Of course, Honkin' on Bobo, the covers album that the band did all the way back in 2004. Never Loved a Girl was originally an Aretha Franklin song written by Ronnie Shannon, and you specifically were very excited to hear how Aerosmith would cover an Aretha Franklin song.
I think it will be very interesting. You know, I grew up in Motown, and this kind of music that she would perform was kind of a staple in our household. A lot of our 45s were Motown type songs. So I'm really curious to hear what I don't know the song by her either. So I'm going to be curious to hear just her general style, how it sounds with an Aerosmith twist.
Now her version, of course, was I Never Loved a Man, The Way I Love You, released in 1967. Interesting for me, because I'm a movie fan and I do a little movie podcast called Backtracks Theme Music, but this song and its B-side, Do Right Woman, Do Right Man, were both featured on the soundtrack to the film The Commitments, which is one of my all-time favorite films about an Irish soul band. You got to check it out, Scott. It uses the F word more than any other movie, I think, in history. I think it might still hold the record. I'm not sure. We've had a lot of foul-mouth movie since then, but for a while, per runtime, it had the most F-bombs than any other film, and it's absolutely brilliant about all these pasty-faced white Irish kids trying to break out of the Van Morrison Bono shadow and playing old soul standards like Chain of Fools and Mustang Sally and I Never Loved a Man.
Interesting. I have not seen the movie. And I will add that to my watch list because that sounds like something that I might enjoy. Before we get into the song, Corey, I feel like this is kind of a good setup. What is your favorite swear word?
Favorite? I always like taking a swear word and pairing it with another word that doesn't make any sense, like shitburger or fucksicle, or, combining words, because you can really get creative that way.
Yeah.
But, fuck is the ultimate word because it's a noun, it's a verb, it's an adjective. Like, it could be anything you want it to be. It's very versatile.
Could be a question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the combo. I like dickhole. That's my favorite.
That's one. A gooder. Nothing wrong with dickhole.
Sadly feel the need to use it often.
Unfortunately, lately, you've had a Bad run, but we're going to improve your mood here tonight, my friend. We're going to go back to Honkin' on Bubble. This is track number 5 from that record. This is Never Loved a Girl.
What'd you say, baby? That's what I thought. You're no good, heartbreaker. You're a liar, you're a cheat.
Wow, I'm really feeling some strong passion coming from Steven on this. But what strikes me also, is the drums. I'm really loving those gentle ghost notes on the snare. It's a really odd shuffle in 3/4. I'm digging the feel of this song. It's moody.
Very moody. And I think we talked about the last time we did a Honkin' on Bobo song. This is everybody in the room playing together, and they wanted it that way. They wanted it mic'd that way, so that you would get the drums, you would get guitar sounds coming through the drum mics, and you would get vocals coming through the drum mics, and you'd get everything kind of coming through the vocal mic. So you get that kind of bleed through. They wanted it to sound like it was live off the floor, which it was. And so it's such a cool sound. Like when Aerosmith is together and they're cooking, this is kind of the opposite of what we had last week with Out of Your Head, where it was very mass produced, recorded separately, stitched together. That's not really Aerosmith. This is Aerosmith at their finest. This obviously isn't a song they wrote, but man, they're singing like Steven's singing it like he wrote the damn thing.
He's singing like he lived it.
It's very unprocessed, if that's even a word. Like, the drums are just mic'd, just ambiently mic'd, right? Guitars, there's no effects on them. It's just running through an amp. The bass, always, we talk about Tom Hamilton every week. You talk about the unsung hero of Aerosmith. Holy crap, Tom Hamilton, one of the best bass players in rock.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is one of the first songs I haven't started out cutting you off 10 seconds in going, I love the bass, you know, and not that I don't. I was just so thunderstruck by the drum style and Steven's voice that really caught me in the beginning. It really feels like people that are playing together. And, you know, it's. There's a certain magic when you capture people playing live and they're just relaxed. They're all looking across the room, smiling at each other, enjoying the song and being in the moment together. And you really feel it on this track.
The way you treat me is a shame. How could you hurt me so?
Is that a little harmonica in the background? I couldn't tell if that was brass or a harmonica, because Steven's singing.
Yeah, I think that was brass. There is a brass section on this. The Memphis horns are credited with brass on Never Loved a Girl. Steven's actually playing piano on this as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to say, I thought I might hear just a gentle organ in the background, but I'm not sure if that's just a blend of sounds. Not a lot of guitar in this one so far.
No, just little accents here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Used to good effect, though.
Yes.
Love a girl the way that I love you.
Now, I think that is Joe on background vocals there.
Oh, I was going to ask you how the vocal situation worked on this album, because being that they, I mean, I would imagine there were some minor overdubs for, you know, just for that layering sake. But they, if whoever that is, they sound really good together.
I thought that was Joe. I don't know if there was a ton of overdubs done on it. They wanted just a very much raw, five off the floor type production style.
Yeah.
Do you know where the phrase honking on Bobo comes from?
You know, I thought I had asked you at one point, and maybe I just meant to and didn't, because I have a lot of thoughts that never end up coming out of my mouth, which could potentially be for the best. No, I don't.
Well, apparently, Tyler came up with it. It may have came from a song by a Canadian country bluegrass band called the Good Brothers. Apparently they used, I don't know the Good Brothers at all, but apparently they used the phrase honking on Bobo, and the band just thought it sounded kind of jazzish and nasty-ish, and it kind of worked for the vibe of the record.
It does sound kind of jazzy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I see that, like, whenever I hear the word Bobo, immediately I think of a clown. Because it's similar to like Bozo the Clown that we had when I was growing up back in the old days. So that I've never liked the title, because it just reminds me of that. And it seems like a weird, like, you know, you're doing that sniff my flower thing and they spray you with the water. No, I like that actual reason much better.
What you thinking, Scott? You kind of looked around there like a...
Well, all of a sudden, it just sounded like the sound changed. It just all of a sudden got really full. And I'm trying to figure out what it was that happened. I'm not really able to pick out any instruments. It's almost like something went from mono to stereo. And it just changed the feel of it. Not the feel, the sound. Like, it just all of a sudden became different. I stay sober for this show, Corey.
Well, you shouldn't. I almost equated to Jack Douglas just taking the sliders and just moving them up, because all of a sudden drums got very big, right? Yeah. And bass got very big and guitars got very big, and it had this really kind of cool build to it. And that's just Joey. He was playing like quiet at the beginning. Maybe he just started pounding the fuck out of the drums like he's known to do. This is a guy who in his drum solo ditches the sticks and uses his hands and head at some point. So
yeah, there's that. Those were some nice long builds, though, that they had, just playing eighth notes, doing that slow, quiet to loud build a couple times. The thing is, like, I can't judge Aerosmith on this necessarily for the writing, because I don't know the original song. But what I can say is that I think everybody's giving a great performance. I love those little guitar fill-ins that came in a little bit ago. Those were really nice, very bluesy. This has got a really good feel to it. It feels like old school blues, but it sounds kind of modern.
So all the guitars are in the fade out.
Right where you want them.
Kind of surprised we got a fade out on Honkin' on Bobo. I thought they would just end naturally, but I like to think that jam kind of went on for another 20 minutes.
It may well have. They definitely seem like they were having a really good time. And at some point, the engineers just got to go, or the producers just got to go, all right, look, I can't put this on the album. I don't feel like editing it. Let's just fade it out.
And that's the nice thing about recording your home studio, which they did at Joe Perry's in the Boneyard. They could go as long as they fucking wanted. And they even said they were only going to record when they were in their all in good moods. Like, we're not going to record if somebody's being a miserable bitch. We're going to wait till everybody's happy and just, you know, kind of let it flow through in the music. And I think it works really well. This is one of my favorite Aerosmith records. They didn't write a tune on it, but they're playing and singing tremendously well on it, I think.
Maybe that's part of the key. Maybe they just really needed to do something that was low pressure. And certainly with that, that rule makes all the recordings just like this one, where they're all together, there you feel the smiles going across the room and that sort of thing. I have to ask you, so how close is this to the original? I mean, obviously, you know, Steven Tyler and Aretha Franklin sing completely differently, but style wise, how did they change it a lot?
No, this is very faithful. And I haven't really heard the Aretha Franklin version too much, but I go back to the Commitments version, which is incredibly faithful, and it's dead on with that one too. There's, you know, that little call response when the I can't sleep at night, and the little guitar little pick and solo, and then I can't eat a bite, and then back to the guitar, that little call and response, that's in both versions as well. So okay. On these covers, they stay pretty faithful to the originals.
Well, then I would say this was a great pick for them, because this song is right in their wheelhouse. I mean, you couldn't pick a more perfect Aerosmith song for Aerosmith to cover.
Oh, 100%. And I read an interview with Steven where he talked about they did a lot of research on what songs to do. Like, they were very selective. And then they heard Eric Clapton was doing a blues cover album. They went, fuck. But they kept up with theirs. They thought they had this great idea. And then Clapton went and did it. So, but before we get to the main part of the evening, we got to play my favorite game show, Scott Haskin. And that's, how many times do you think Aerosmith performed I Never Loved a Man, or I Never Loved a Girl, the way that I love you? Now, I'm going to not give you a hint this week. The answer could be zero. But you have to let me know what you think the answer is, with closest to the actual number without going over.
Well, I anticipated I might be put in this position again this week, mainly because I am every week.
Yep.
I was thinking earlier, does this song translate to the stage? And I don't think that it does. I think it translates to a moment like this, where they're just all together and smiling and having a little jam. I don't think it's really one for the stage. They might have tried it, but I'm going to say no. I don't think they ever did.
So you're saying zero?
I am saying zero. If it's one, I quit.
You are 60 off. They played it 60 times.
Wow. Interesting.
30 times in 2003, 30 times in 2004.
Okay. Well, maybe it I could say maybe it translates better than I think, but they aren't, you know, always picking the best songs or knowing when to stop playing songs. So I can't necessarily say it worked. I'll just say it's a great song for the band, for sure. Yes.
And now we have to ask ourselves, Scott Haskin, is this a great song for the mixtape? I tell you, there was only one single released off Honkin' on Bobo, and it was Baby Please Don't Go. So if this has a home on the mixtape, it's going to be on the deep cut side of the mixtape. Let's recap those songs for you now. Currently, we have Heart's Done Time, Roadrunner from this very record, No More, No More, Girl Keeps Coming Apart, Bone to Bone, Coney Island Whitefish Boy, The Farm, Cimaria, Rats in the Cellar, and Combination. I'm going to go first, Scott.
Okay.
Because I think you went first last week.
I did.
And I tell you what, I love this record. I love most of the songs on it. There's one, when we get to it, I don't know if it fits, because, you know, Aerosmith's not even really singing on it. Yeah, they have a whole different, it's a whole thing. We'll get to that one. However, I'm looking at her deep cuts, and as much as I love this track and their cover of it, if I'm going to swing out a cover, you're looking at Roadrunner, and I like Roadrunner just that much more. So I would vote no unless you can convince me otherwise. What are your thoughts on I Never Loved a Girl?
Well, I will say I really like this. I've been looking forward to hearing it for a while. It did not disappoint, but I think the end of the song, and again, I'm not knocking Aerosmith for this, but I think the end of the song just was kind of a little repetitive. I can say in the way that they didn't do anything to make it not repetitive. You know, you could play that same part, but change things up, do something different on the guitar, play a different bass lick, you know, something. But it just felt kind of over and over. So I don't think it's better than Roadrunner. I think they're both really good songs, but I don't think I would push you to make the argument to put this on the mixtape.
Okay, and there was not another track on there that you would consider swapping it out?
No, I don't think so. I think that this is good, but I don't think it's stronger than what we've got there at the moment.
Great track, though. Had a lot of fun listening to it. Aerosmith fucking killed it. Like, it's a wonderful song, covered incredibly well. Just, we have 9 great tracks, and it's going to take something really special to knock one of those out. So there you have it. I Never Loved a Girl. Apparently, we never did love it, because it's gone. One and done on the show. Show 82 in the books. But now, Scott Haskin, you get to replace a song on the dice for next week. So.
Yes, I do. Yes,
what are you thinking? We have 2 big hits on there right now. We got a couple of Music from Another Dimensions on there. We got 1 track from Night in the Ruts. Mm-hmm. Are you thinking later, Aerosmith? Are you going to go back early?
I'm thinking Living on the Edge.
Wow, we're going with another hit. Living on the Edge from Get a Grip. Oh, yeah, that was a single.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, another big single.
I'm still going with it. I don't know that song.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this will be interesting. I just heard this on the radio the other day, for crying out loud.
Wow. It's hard to get away from Aerosmith on the radio, let me tell you.
Yeah. Oh, there are a ton of singles from Get a Grip. Let's just see if I can... what have we got here? Doo-doo-doo. Yeah, we had Living on the Edge, Eat the Rich, Fever, Crying, Amazing, Shut Up and Dance. We're all singles. And Crazy. Also from Get a Grip. So yeah, ton. Walk on Water even was a single. Holy cow.
Wow.
Yeah. Big record for the Bad Boys from Boston. Get a Grip. One of my all-time personal favorites. I love that record.
What was their bestseller?
Get a Grip overall was their best-selling album. Yeah. Pump actually was also 7 times platinum back in 89. So they had 2 back-to-back 7 times platinum. They're almost diamond. Diamond is 10 million. Platinum is 1 million units sold. So 7 million is 7 times platinum.
Yeah, and you know, when you think diamond albums, you're talking like Michael Jackson, Thriller, got to be up there, and it depends on what list you look at too, because some of those lists will include greatest hits albums, because some greatest hits albums have been like the Eagles' greatest hits, I think, is up there in that range, and one or two others. Then there's lists that show soundtrack albums, and others don't. So. Really interesting to see what the top sellers are, but man, nobody can deny that Aerosmith has not been a successful band. They're killing it regardless, and they've had their flops, but they've had some just amazing albums.
Totally. Do you know what the number one rock album in terms of sales is?
Rock album. Okay. I'm going to say it's probably Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA.
No, actually Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA, 22 times platinum.
Wow. Oh, geez.
So pretty good. But the all-time winner right now, is 30 million total certified copies, 50 million in claim sales. So that would be, 50 times platinum or 30 times platinum for this record. Mm-hmm. I'll give you one more guess. I'll tell you what, Michael Jackson was number one overall with Thriller, 51.2 times platinum.
And who was the guitar player on Thriller?
Well, on Beat It, it was Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah. Didn't he play on Thriller too?
No, he just played on Beat It and didn't ask for any money, didn't ask for any royalties, and turned away a boatload of money. He would have been a very rich man. Not that he wasn't anyway, but he would have been like incredibly wealthy. But
right.
I'm just looking at him. Yeah.
You know, I want it to be something like Metallica, Master of Puppets, but I know it's not. They're not, I don't think they're in the top 10.
No.
It's got to be like, I know this is wrong, but I can't. I'm going to say Journey, Escape. I don't think they're even in the top 10, but I'm going to say Escape.
No, they're not. We're looking at albums of 40 million copies or more. The top rock album of all time. AC/DC, Black and Black.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
And by a long ways. Next is Whitney Houston, The Bodyguard soundtrack.
Right.
Then it's Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's Eagles' Greatest Hits.
See, but this is where it gets confusing, because if you're now, like, you're probably looking at a list of best overall sales total, right?
Yep. Okay. Yep.
Because then you're going to get a mix of country, you're going to get a mix of soundtracks and best ofs, and like I'm sure the Eagles, best of the Eagles is on that list.
That's number 5. Yep.
Yeah. But can you imagine that? Your best of album is number five, but your albums aren't.
Well, and it was just their first greatest hit, 71 to 75.
Yeah, that's even crazier. Now, I don't think that these numbers are included because they're not actual sales, but at some point, they've got to measure streaming and determine what, how do streams count? Are we going to switch from overall sales to overall plays? Is it going to be a different list? Because the whole thing is different now. People aren't buying albums the way that they used to. So I don't know. There's got to be some other way that they're going to have to start looking at this.
I don't even want to think about that. I'm old school. I like thinking about gold records, platinum records, multi-platinum diamond records. So if you go by the claim sales, Back in Black was five times diamond.
Wow. Are you an AC/DC fan?
I am. I enjoy them quite a bit.
Yeah. That seems like a band that you would be a good one for you.
We may do Bon Scott era AC/DC on Ultimate Catalog Clash if I have my way, because some good records that influenced a lot of the best players in the world, including Eddie Van Halen. One of his favorite records of all time is Powerage, which is a Bon Scott era AC/DC track. But I was going to finish out the top 10 here for you so you get an idea. So we had Michael Jackson, AC/DC, Whitney Houston, Pink Floyd, The Eagles. Number six, Meatloaf, Bat Out of Hell.
Oh, yeah.
43 times platinum. Then we have the Eagles with Hotel California. So they got two records in the top 10. Shania Twain, Come On Over. Yeah. Fleetwood Mac, Rumors. And the Bee Gees, the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. You're asking about Metallica. Their first record clocks in at 31 million records. And it's the Black Album, the self-titled record from 1991.
Really? I would have thought Ride the Lightning or Master of Puppets would have been their highest sold album. You know, it's interesting that the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack would not be something I would suspect would be in the top 50. Nothing against it, but I would never have guessed that sales would have been that high for that.
What do you think the highest rated or highest ranking Beatles record is? Original record. Their Beatles One record is in there. It's 31 times platinum, but they're out of all their original records. What do you think is the highest seller?
It's got to be either Let It Be or the White Album, or no, it's got to be Sgt. Pepper.
Sgt. Pepper, yep. Mm-hmm. 30 million copies. Actually, also coming in at 30 million is Abbey Road.
Mm, great album. Yeah. Oh,
totally.
Love the Beatles. I love that era of the Beatles. I don't like their early stuff as much. It's a little too straightforward and basic for me. But when they started getting more away from mainstream songwriting and the songs got a little more interesting. Like I love Let It Be, Abbey Road, White Album, Magical Mystery Tour, all that. That's a great time for me.
Absolutely. So it's quite a while before we get to an Aerosmith record, but
how far?
Well, they don't have one over 7 million. And this list here I'm looking at, it's 20 million plus.
You know, it's crazy when you think about it. And granted, time has a factor because, you know, how long has the Beatles or the Eagles best of been out? Well, it's been out since the mid 70s or whenever they actually released it. But it's hard to imagine that you sell 7 million albums, 7 million albums, and you're not even close to the top in the world. That's an insane number. If you really think about just 7 million album sales, that's crazy. That doesn't count singles. That's just albums. That's amazing.
Yep. Imagine being a band that has two diamond records on their resume. Van Halen did it. 1984 and Van Halen 1 both went over 10 million copies each, but another band did it. And I'm wondering if you can guess, they're kind of an 80s mainstay that is still playing today.
Ooh.
The albums in question are from 1983 and 1987.
It couldn't be A Flock of Seagulls, even though they're one of the only 80s bands to win a Grammy.
Think glam. Think they're currently on tour.
Oh, Motley Crue.
No, but it's actually the band they're touring with, Def Leppard.
Def Leppard, yeah.
They're
like one of the biggest all-time selling too, aren't they?
They're up there, yeah, but Pyromania and Hysteria, both well over 10 million copies each.
I think Pyromania just had an anniversary, too, of the original release. I had a copy of that on vinyl.
Yep. Great album. I still do. It came out in 1983, so we're in 2023. So, yeah, celebrating a big birthday this year, 40 years.
Wow. I wonder if they're doing anything for it, like releasing a 18-album deluxe edition.
Oh, probably. Everybody's doing that now, right? I just saw, like, Tom Petty's releasing re-releasing Mojo. Brian Adams just re-recorded a whole bunch of his records at Abbey Hall, the Royal Albert Hall in London, England, re-releasing those on vinyl at, $100 for the set. And every band is now re-releasing everything on vinyl because people are buying it.
Well, if you're going to do it, at least make a good package. Put a lot of good stuff in there. Make it worthwhile. You know, if you're just re-releasing the album and it's on 180 gram and you're putting liquid in it, that's cool and all. Give us something we don't have. Give us something we haven't heard yet. Because there's if you could find the original tapes, there's got to be cuts or things on there, rehearsal attempts or, alternate solos. Give us something worth buying.
Absolutely. I know Queen's doing that right now. I got the News of the World edition, came with a whole bunch of rare B-sides and outtakes and things like that. And they just released a Miracle not that long ago. So they're going through the whole catalog doing that. Here's hoping Aerosmith might do that too. I'd love to hear, some outtakes from Toys in the Attic or Rocks go way back when. Even stuff from like Rock and a Hard Place, or Draw the Line, some of their less heralded albums, and see how that goes. But Scott, I think we've prattled on long enough. What do you say you tell the fine folks about the Deep Dive Podcasting Network?
Well, it's just a crazy network of incredible podcasts, Corey. I have to say, it's really cool to be a part of it and to be able to say that these shows are just all representing different bands of different eras and genres, but we all work together. We all support each other. I absolutely love that. You mentioned earlier your show Backtracks Theme Music that you do with John Mariano. You also do a show with Mark Kermeyer called And the Podcast Will Rock. And you do a show with Kevin Brown called The Ultimate Catalog Clash, currently going through the Genesis catalog. I'm looking forward to the new episode coming out tomorrow. Well, I should say tomorrow as we record this, which is about a week in advance. Kevin does his own show because, you're not going to dominate his life. He has the Tom Petty Project. He also does a show with his buddy Randy called Seaside Pod Review. Then I have Uriah Heep, The Magician's Podcast. Nate and John have the Deep Purple Podcast, The Simple Man at Skinnerd Reconsidered, Terry T-Bone Mathley at T-Bone's Prime Cuts on the other side, Rye has Sabbath Bloody Podcast, Paul, Joe, and David at In the Lap of the Pods, Andy and Matt at Hawk Binge, Eric and Jonathan at Maiden A to Z, Daniel and Josh at Diary of the Mad Men, the ultimate Aussie podcast. Ben and Sam at Universally Speaking, the Redhead Chili Pepper podcast. Yeah, I
like that better.
For a change. Yeah, I bet that there's a cover band out there somewhere.
The Redhead Chili Peppers?
There's got to be.
All Gingers,
All Gingers, yep. The Red Hot Chili Peppers podcast. George and Hattie over at the Judas Priest cast. Clay and Rye at North by South podcast. See, once I've stumbled, it's
downhill.
It's a freight train going downhill from there. Greg and Jonathan at So Far, So Pod, So What. We have Quinn at And Volume for All. Sav, Nick, Steve, and Mark at Rock Roulette podcast. Chaz and Greg at Regarding Lulu, and Chaz and Shats at our newest show, Rush Rash. They have just putting out their third episode, so check them out. Give them some love. And then our friends, of course, Sean Geek and Fast Fret, Eric at Booked on Rock, Ken Knapsack at Pop Rock and Radio, and the flagship of all Deep Dive podcasts, Pod of Thunder.
That's right. And a little spoiler alert here. I just got my invitation to be on Rush Rash. We're going to record it next week, so we're going to spin that wheel, and I'm going to talk about Rush, apparently, a band I know precious little about. So
that's going to be an interesting one, because you're not a big prog guy, and they're pretty intense.
Yeah, I do like a lot of their stuff, and I can really appreciate them as musicians and artists. They're just brilliant, so looking forward to that. I'll be awful on that show, but please check out Chaz and Shats. They're doing a great job over at Rush Rash. But until next time, Scott Haskin, do you have anything yourself you got coming up? I hear the Haskin Cask is ready to make a return.
Oh my God, yeah, finally. All the episodes are uploaded, all the show notes are cleaned up and accepted by the new distributor. And new shows. Well, by the time this airs, we should have had one new show already. And then this week, this Wednesday, one Corey Morissette joins the Haskin Cast podcast for a very interesting first-time review for me. Obviously, you know that we both lived, but I will say barely.
Yeah, it'll be my last appearance on the Haskin cast. I'm just going to say that right now. Had it with that bullshit. But anyways, go check out that show wherever you get your podcast from. And thank you for joining us here. And until next time, on behalf of Scott Haskin, my name is Corey Morissette. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, let's give the final word to Steven Tyler.